Small details or big surfaces, tight corners or odd shapes, flat, rounded, textured, or tall. Whatever your next project, there's a spray paint pattern that's just right. Because Rust-Oleum's new Custom Spray 5-in-1 gives you control with 5 different spray patterns. So you can tackle nooks, crannies, edges, and curves without worrying about drips, runs, uneven coverage, or anything else. Custom Spray 5-in-1. Only from Rust-Oleum.
Hej och välkomna till Food Pharmacy-podden med Mia Klase och med mig Lina Närtby. Ja, nu ska jag snart åka iväg och träffa Michael Mosley. Det är ju inte första gången som vi intervjuar Michael Mosley här i podden. Och jag är så glad att han äntligen är tillbaka här i Stockholm så vi får till en till intervju. För er som inte känner till Michael Mosley så är han läkare, vetenskapsjournalist på BBC. Han är mannen bakom 5-2-dieten och han har skrivit succéböckerna 5-2-dieten, friskare, smalare, längre liv med halvfasta och blodsockerkoll på 8 veckor. Och flera av Michael Mosleys vetenskapsdokumentärer har visats även i svensk tv, till exempel serien Medicin med Mosley. Michael Mosley har också blivit utnämnd till Medical Journalist of the Year i Storbritannien. Och nu är han alltså i Stockholm igen för att lansera sin senaste bok, Mosleys 30 bästa hälsotips. Små saker som får stor betydelse. So welcome, Michael Mosley, to Food Pharmacy Show.
Lovely to be here.
So nice to see you again.
Yeah, it's been a while.
Yes. So you're here to launch your book, Just One Thing.
I think in Sweden they're calling it Michael Mosley's 30 Top Tips or
exactly.
Health Tips.
Yeah. Exactly. In this book, you actually gather your 30 best health tips. So 30 small things that you can do each day, and all together, you are very sure that this will improve your health, yeah?
Yes.
Would you say even it would lead to longevity?
Well, interestingly, I've just made a television series called Live Longer, which is going out on SVT at the moment, Michael Mosley's Tips on How to Live Longer. And one of the things that I looked at there was some fascinating research in the US where there is a blood test which is produced by a not-for-profit called the Clock Foundation. And it is a way of measuring your biological age as opposed to your real age. So they're actually measuring what's called methylation of your DNA. But it is the most accurate measure we have at the moment of how well you are aging. And it's also known as the death clock because it is a better predictor than your age of whether you will have a heart attack or stroke and when you will die. Mm-hmm. So this is a really interesting test. And one of the things they did is they did a short study, and this was on 40 middle-aged men, and they measured their biological age at the beginning. And then they asked them to do a number of the things which are in the book. So, for example, they asked them to do some intermittent fasting, that sort of, you know, some time-restricted eating, got them to eat a nutrient-rich diet with plenty of vitamin C and other things. They got them to practice slow, deep breathing, which is one of the things in the book I'm a big fan of, to reduce stress. And they also got them to do 30 minutes of varied exercise. And again, a lot of the things in the book are around exercise. And they did this for 8 weeks. And at the end of the 8 weeks, they redid the blood tests and they found that they had reduced their biological age by 2 years.
Oh,
and that
wow.
was in 8 weeks.
Oh, wow.
Which is wow. And as far as I know, that's the first time anyone has ever demonstrated it. Everything in this book is based on science, showing that it will reduce your blood sugars or improve your strength or maybe help your mental health or maybe reduce your blood pressure. But this is a first test where you could actually say it may also potentially de-age you, reverse the aging process. And that is phenomenal, I think. Don't you?
I love it. It's so good. And I really like the how you have packaged all this, because it's so much easier to someone to get all these variety of tips, and you can actually pick and choose, because research shows that if we try to change everything overnight, we tend to fail. But here you can actually take small steps and you can add a new routine into your daily life. So I think that the listeners are curious to hear how you are implying these routines into your life. And I loved to read it in the book to follow you during a day. So if you could guide us through your day.
Absolutely. I'd start by saying I also did the blood test I described to see what my biological age is. And I am 4 to 5 years younger than my real age. So I'm 66 and it told me I was 60.
Oh, wow.
I actually did the test with the guy who invented the test, who's a professor in California. And he has a biological age, which is 4 years older than his real age. Yeah.
I think actually thinking about how many lifestyle related diseases there are out there today, I think most of us are actually having an older biological age than the actual age, unfortunately.
So the great news is you can reverse it, and you can do it at any point in your life. You can make changes. So the way I've structured the book is as a day, because that's how we think of things. And as you say, you can pick up things or drop things depending on what you want to do. Now, one of the things as well is it's much easier if you have a partner you do it with, because then you will support each other.
Yeah.
And it's much easier as well if you do it at specific times, these things, but then you're more likely, the habit is more likely to stick. Mm-hmm. So for example, when we wake up in the morning, we normally wake up at the same time, because we know for sleep, it is a really good idea to have a set routine. So you kind of wake up, for example, at 7 a.m. And then we do resistance exercises. Specifically, we do the press-ups and squats. Mm. And that is because I know that after the age of 30, you start to lose 5 to 10% of your muscle mass every decade. So it's really important to do resistance exercises where you work muscles.
And I read that only like 5% of people are doing this.
Completely. People know about the benefits of walking and running, but they don't think about their muscles. And the great thing about the press-up and the squat is they work the biggest muscles in your body. So when you're doing the squat, you're working the muscles in your bottom, which are big. Mm-hmm. And when you're doing the press-up, that's mainly the sort of shoulders. But the other benefit is that it's really good for your spine. So again, I had myself tested recently, and I am 66, but I have the spine of a 30-year-old.
Oh, wow.
And that is because I do press-ups. Mm. And because I also do the plank, and that's also good for blood pressure.
Yeah, I know. I read that. It's actually the best exercise for blood pressure.
It is. That and the wall squat. Mm. So what I love about these things is you get three benefits. Because when you do the press up and when you do the squat, you're going through a vertical motion. And a study done in the University of South Wales showed that when you do that, that increases the blood flow to the brain. And it leads to the release of a hormone called BDNF, brain-derived neurotrophic hormone. And this is like fertilizer for the brain. This helps to maintain brain cells and lead to development of new ones. So when you are doing these two simple exercises, you're building your muscles, you're helping your brain, and you're improving your spine. Mm. So, and you can get it done in a few minutes. And the reason we do it first thing is because we know if we don't do it, then we'll never do it.
That's actually my best tips as well. To start, be healthy in the morning, because then the likelihood of you continuing doing healthy stuff is so much bigger.
And it's all about linking it to something you are already doing. Because if you're already getting out of bed, and everyone has to get out of bed at some point in the day, why not do this? Instead of, for example, reaching for a cup of coffee, because one of the other tips I have in the book is do not drink coffee within about an hour of waking up. And this was a tip given to me by a coffee expert. And he said, coffee is great, but just when you're waking up, Your stress hormone cortisol is rising. It has been rising for about an hour before you wake. Mm. And that is to get you ready for the day ahead. But if you pour coffee straight on top of a rising stress hormone, then you will feel more stressed, your blood pressure will go up, your blood sugars will go up.
Mm-hmm.
So it is best to wait until the cortisol starts to fall, and that typically takes about an hour from when you wake up. So your stress hormones are going down, give yourself a boost then, and perhaps have your coffee with breakfast. But again, one of the tips I give is try to delay breakfast.
Yeah.
And that is also known as time-restricted eating, which I'm sure you are familiar with.
Yes, I've been doing that for many years.
And okay, what do you do? What's your pattern?
So what I do is that I break my fast at 10 o'clock with coffee and breakfast. And then I have a big lunch.
Yeah.
And then I have a dinner. And I'm so into this routine. So my body is... you know, I'm not so interested in food earlier anymore. Before, I had coffee like 6 o'clock in the morning. And I said to myself, I could never do this intermittent fasting. But it took me, you know, not long. And then I just completely switched. And my whole mindset about this switched.
Absolutely. And when do you stop eating?
I stop eating at 7. I'm done. Okay. 6, 7, something.
Okay, so you are doing sort of 16:8, maybe a bit of 14:10.
Yeah. Yeah, exactly.
Absolutely. Brilliant. No, that is where the science lies. One of the sort of people who really first did the research is a guy called Professor Sachin Panda, and it's all about circadian clock, circadian rhythms. So I wrote about his research first when I wrote The Fast Diet. Mm. So I wrote this book, which became an international phenomenon, which was about the 5-2 diet, which I'd invented, where you cut your calories 2 days a week. But in that book, I also wrote about time-restricted eating. And in many ways, you get the most benefits if you combine them. Mm. They are different, but they complement each other. So I'm, I think what you're doing is great. Mm. And as you say, it's surprising how quick. So Professor Panda himself, what he does is he stops eating at around 6 or 7, and he doesn't eat again until about 10 o'clock the next morning. Mm. And so that's his pattern. And that's where almost all the research is going. Because some people do 16:8, but for most people that's hard.
Mm.
If you can manage 14:10, 14 hours of overnight fasting, then you can do that 4 or 5 times a week. Then, and you do it presumably most days of the week, yeah?
Yeah, I mean, I do it most days, but like yesterday I was at a dinner with friends and then right. I don't care about it. And then I just know that the next day I go back to my routine, and that's the good thing with having routines, that if you take 1 or days, 2 days, you know, off the routine, it's fine. You just know exactly, you know, what to do when you're back, sort of.
Absolutely. So one thing I would say about habits is initially you have to stick with it pretty well daily until it becomes a habit.
Yeah.
And then once it's become a habit, then you can sort of break it, do it, mix with it. Mm. But initially you have to be very persistent because you're kind of laying down new pathways in your brain. Mm. But that's really what's happening. New connections are being made. New things are forming. Once you've created a habit, it's very difficult to break it. Mm. And that's true for both good and bad habits. Mm. So yeah, that's I'm pleased to see we both start our day in much the same way. One of the other things I often but not always do in the morning is have a cold shower. You a cold shower fan?
I do it as well.
Okay,
have a cold dip often.
Oh, right, okay. Yeah. As in, are you near a pool? Or
no, I'm actually not, but in the ocean here in Stockholm.
Right. Yeah. Very good.
Yeah.
Yeah, so again, in the book, I explore the science of that because there is some really interesting recent research looking at benefits of it. Quite a lot of it has been done in the UK the impact on, for example, the immune system, on mood. And they did a study where they showed that spending 5 minutes in coolish water, not even particularly cold water, led to changes in the blood flow in the brain, particularly benefiting areas of the brain associated with mood and with appetite. So there's something really interesting there. My technique, because I don't live anywhere near the sea, is I get in the shower, I run it warm while I wash myself, then I turn it on fully cold, and then I sing.
Oh, so, yeah, I read that. Wonderful.
So singing is beneficial, but I get two things done at the same time.
Yeah.
I get a bit of singing, and it also is, for me, a great timer. So I know, for example, I have some songs I sing, and I know the ones which last 30 seconds and the ones that last a minute. So I aim sometimes for 30 seconds, sometimes for a minute, because Rarely do I stay in the cold shower longer than a minute, but when I go swimming in the sea, obviously, yeah. I stay longer. But
I love to read, actually, that singing is good for you. So could you please tell us why?
Sure. So singing is something that, and music is something that clearly plays an important role in humans, in human society, because we've been doing it, you know, for thousands of years. And I suspect originally survival for human beings depended on being part of the tribe. And I think it was a way of communication. It was a way of bringing people together. I was involved in a study a few years ago with Nottingham University, where we got a group of people together. And they were measuring something called our endocannabinoid levels. These are cannabis-like substances which get produced and which give you a sort of a high. So we were asked to do three things. One of them was to sing together in a choir. Another was to cycle for half an hour on exercise bikes. And the third was to read dishwasher manual. So we had to read a manual on all how to make a dishwasher, how to build it. And not surprisingly, the dishwasher manual had no effect. You know, it was a control group. The cycling did raise the endocannabinoid levels, but the singing had the biggest impact.
Oh,
On our self-reported mood, but also on levels of this feel-good hormone.
Mm.
So that was really interesting. And quite a lot of people who took part suffer from low mood, depression, and they found that singing in the choir or just singing by themselves had a major impact on their mood. And it seems to be via this hormone. I'm sure there are other mechanisms in action, but we know, for example, that singing can relieve pain, the pain of childbirth, all sorts of things. So singing is a very, very powerful thing.
Mm. So I sing every day in my car.
Okay, good. You see, that's the thing. You can just put on the radio, just sing along to whatever it might be, and it just makes you feel good.
Yeah, yeah, it does. So you have a cold water shower and you sing. And then you've done your resistance training,
yep.
And you make sure to wake up more or less the same day, and you sort of work with your circadian rhythm in this way. So after that, what is happening?
I often go out for a walk, or at least stand outside, because bright light is hugely important, particularly early morning bright light, and that resets your circadian clock.
Mm.
It is also because I know a lot of Swedes, suffer from seasonal affective disorder. So in the winter, my mood goes low and I get these crazy urgings for carbs, for sugary things first thing in the morning. And these are characteristic of seasonal affective disorder. And the best way of addressing that is exposure to bright light. So if you can't get outdoors or the light is not strong enough, then I also have a lamp. Yeah. So I have what's called a SAD lamp. You need something which produces about 10,000 lux.
Mm.
That's a unit of light. That's how bright it is outdoors. So indoors, it's probably the light is maybe 50 to 100, maybe 200 lux.
Mm.
You kind of don't notice because your eyes are so good. But actually, it is so much brighter out there. Mm. And again, we evolved, you know, on the plains of Africa or in the jungles of Africa where there was lots of bright light, you know. And it's not surprising, therefore, that we suffer when it is dark and gloomy.
Yeah.
So bright light, ideally, I go for a brisk walk with the dog. And that sets me up for the day. I've got a wood near me. We know that spending time in green spaces is good. Maybe I will sing. Maybe I'll listen to some music because you need to walk briskly. So I choose music which has a beat of at least 100 paces a minute. And that ensures that I walk briskly. You aim 100 beats a minute, I reckon. But also occasionally when you're in a wood, you want to stop and you kind of just want to breathe. Maybe you take your headphones off. You just do what's called forest bathing. That's what the Japanese call
yeah.
it. You just breathe in the sounds, the smells. Again, what I write about in the book is the research around the benefits of some of the scents, the tree oils and things like that. The things you pick up from nature, which seem to have, they boost mood, but also they appear to boost the immune system. Mm-hmm. And there's quite a strong body of evidence that spending time in nature is really good for your mental and physical health.
Yeah.
But you need to embrace it rather than just run straight through it.
Yeah.
With your headphones on, you need to stop, smell, touch, just kind of have a moment where you are just enjoying your surroundings. You're looking at the light coming through the trees and you're just being there as opposed to being somewhere else. Because most of the time we are somewhere else. We are thinking about the future, we're thinking about the past, we're thinking about regrets.
Mm.
You've got to choose the moments to just observe life around you and enjoy it. So I try to do that. As I said, a walk. No, I don't always have time, but that's part of my morning routine, and having a pet is always a good thing.
yeah, it is.
They make you go outside.
Yeah, I mean,
and they love it so much, you know, and they're so grateful.
Yeah, it's wonderful. Then you could also combine, I mean, you talk about deep breathing.
Yes.
That is also something you can combine if you have a moment in the forest or by the sea or wherever you are, because it's easier to feel here and now if you sort of take deep breaths.
Absolutely.
I feel at least.
I mean, I'm a big fan of mindfulness, but it's quite difficult to do. Mm. Whereas one of the life-changing things I found was just doing slow, deep breaths. One of them is 4-2-4, where you breathe in through your nose to a count of four, you hold it to two, and then you breathe out through your mouth to a count of four. And you do that for a minute or so, and it slows your heart rate down, and it's really soothing. I do it when I'm stressed. I do it when I'm in the wood. I particularly do it at 3 a.m. when I'm awake. Mm. And I often am awake at 3 a.m. I just kind of wake up. It's really annoying.
I read that.
Yeah. And then I do the deep breathing in. I often just kind of, you know, within a minute or so, I'm back to sleep again. Mm. And who would have believed that something as simple as slow, deep breathing could have such a profound effect? The reality, of course, is that the yogics, other people, have known this for thousands of years, but we're just catching up with it. And there are different forms of deep breathing, but I find the simplest is, as I said, 4-2-4. And just practice that a bit. Do it at any moment when you're feeling stressed. Just do it at any moment you're going for a walk. Just do it. And you'll find it becomes an ingrained habit. So when it's 3 a.m, you're worrying about your life, your children, your, you know, what's happening with the world. It becomes a simple thing to do. And otherwise, if you haven't practiced it, what happens is within a few minutes, you're back thinking all the terrible thoughts.
Yeah.
So it's a matter of practicing during the day, like everything else. Once it becomes a natural thing to do, then you just, it's part of your toolkit. You just kind of draw it out, and it's really helpful, particularly, as I said, when you're feeling, you know, a bit panicked.
Yeah. But that I find also cold water showers very good if you feel stressed and a bit panicked, because it sort of forces you to be present here and now, and to also take the deep breaths, because you can't stay doing short breaths when it's so cold. You the body itself, you know, requires you to breathe.
Absolutely, though, to be honest, at 3 a.m, I think it's unlikely I'm going to be taking a
cold shower. Yeah. That would be impossible.
Hey, I'm Ryan Reynolds. Recently, I asked Mint Mobile's legal team if big wireless companies are allowed to raise prices due to inflation. They said yes. And then when I asked if raising prices technically violates those onerous 2-year contracts, they said, "What the f*** are you talking about, you insane Hollywood ass!" So to recap, we're cutting the price of Mint Unlimited from $30 a month to just $15 a month. Give it a try at mintmobile.com/switch.
$45 up front for 3 months plus taxes and fees. Promo rate for new customers for limited time. Unlimited more than 40 gigabytes per month. Slows full terms at mintmobile.com.
Imagine the softest sheets you've ever felt. Now imagine them getting even softer over time. That's what you'll feel with Boll & Branch's organic cotton sheets. In a recent customer survey, 96% replied that Boll & Branch sheets get softer with every wash. So start getting your best night's sleep in sheets that get softer and softer for years to come. And you can try their sheets with a 30-night guarantee, plus 15% off your first order with code BUTTERY. So head to bollandbranch.com today. Exclusions apply. See site for details.
So often, but not always, but often you try to have a brisk walk.
I do. It depends on how busy I am. But that is a you know, big part of my day. Mm-hmm. And I like doing it with my wife, Claire. You know, we are both sort of semi-retired. She's still working as a doctor, but part-time. Mm-hmm. And I'm mainly kind of writing books and doing television and doing podcasts. Mm-hmm. So sometimes I have to dash off to make a television program. But if I can, that's what I do. And that sets me up. It also means that I've delayed having the coffee, I've delayed having breakfast because I've got some of these other things in first. And with breakfast, I'll often have, I have quite a protein-rich breakfast. So I have something like eggs, or maybe I have fish, because I know Swedes love some herring and things like that. So I find that oily fish is very good for, you know, your the omega-3 is very good for your brain, it's good for your joints. So I have kippers, which were apparently the Queen of England's most popular breakfast. There you go. So I eat like the Queen. I had that with tomatoes. Or scrambled eggs, boiled eggs, omelette, and often have it with fermented foods. So we make our own kimchi, sauerkraut. And again, I think that's a good thing to do because I think there's a lot of evidence for the benefits of fermented foods. And again, it's something that people have done for centuries, if not thousands of years.
Yeah.
You know, European tradition, very much so. You ferment the vegetables in the autumn and they last throughout the year. Mm. You know, in places like Poland, Germany, big tradition of fermenting.
Yeah.
It's gone away. Again, Asia, Japan, China, really big into fermented foods. And I think it's being rediscovered because we're so much more interested in the gut microbiome.
Yeah.
I know you've written books about this. And that's why the critical things for your gut microbes, the things they like, are fiber, which is why you should put more fiber in your food. But also you can parachute some good gut microbes down by eating fermented food like lactobacillus, because that's what things like yogurt, but also kimchi and sauerkraut are absolutely packed with these microbes, which have kind of learned how to survive in acid environments. So they can pass through the acid contents of the stomach and reach your gut intact. And that's why there's a lot of interest now in research into fermented foods and the impact, particularly on mental health.
Yeah.
Which is, I've done quite a few films on this. I've done quite a few podcasts on this.
Oh,
and,
interesting.
Because I think it's there's a really good research unit down in Southern Ireland in a place called Cork, where they explore this research. But indeed, one researcher there is Swedish. So she's done a lot of research. I'm looking at randomized controlled trials, getting people to change their diet to eat a richer, more fiber-rich diet, but also to introduce fermented foods. And this has a marked effect on depression and anxiety. So that's her particular interest. So that's another of the things I would recommend you do. And I am a big fan of making it yourself. It's really cheap, really interesting. And I've got a recipe in the book on how to do it. But it's also good fun because there's something really pleasurable about making your own stuff and burping it in the morning, and you come down and it's beginning to ferment and you give it a few little prods. It's kind of like, you know, having a fishbowl. It's kind of living thing. And it's just, it's one of those really, really easy things to do. And you think this is going to be hard, you know, why don't I just get it from the supermarket? And the reality is it's much better if you make it yourself. And you just need, you know, you need a jar which you can seal, and then you really just need cabbage, onions, water, salt, and some spices, and you can make it yourself, and you feel really pleased, and you get all those benefits. So that's a really simple thing to do.
I will try your recipe in the book.
Absolutely.
And I'll get back to you.
You let me know exactly.
Yeah. One
of the other things I recommend you do at breakfast is something I'm doing at the moment, which is drinking water.
So instead of coffee, you start
as
with
well as coffee. So I start by having a cup of tea, because I'm English, obviously.
Yeah.
And also the caffeine content of tea is lower. And then I have a large glass of water. And then when I've had my meal, that's normally when I drink the coffee, because it's best to have the coffee after the meal than before the meal. Whereas my wife, Claire, she likes to put off her coffee until about 11 o'clock. She likes to savor it. She likes to save up. And she also is much more sensitive to caffeine than I am. So she has to stop before midday, whereas I can drink coffee all afternoon. It has no effect. But I try not to, because I know it also has a big effect on my blood pressure. Because I have a home blood pressure measure. And when I drink coffee, my blood pressure shoots up and then it comes down again. So I try not to drink it after then. But water is, we all know that we should be drinking more water. But the simplest measure is to, simplest way of doing it is to ensure you have a large glass of water with every meal.
Yeah.
And an expert I spoke to said the other way of looking at it is, imagine that you should be going to the toilet to have a wee 7 times a day. Yeah. So he said, like, you know, 5 a day for fruit and vegetables, 7 wees a day. And that if you're not going that often, you're probably not drinking enough. And again, that has the benefit that if you drink lots of water, then you will get up and go to the toilet more often. And that means you're not sitting down all the time. So you're sitting, watching television, and you suddenly go, ooh, I must get up. Yeah. So it's a good way, again, of nudging you to go and do something else. And while you're doing that, when you come out, after you've washed your hands, maybe you could do a few more squats and press-ups.
Yeah.
So you can kind of, you know, combine different things.
Yeah.
So a large glass of water with every meal is something I tell everyone. Mm.
Yeah. Okay, so when do you have your lunch?
Mm. So I'm just having another slap of water there. Typically have lunch around sort of 1 o'clock.
Mm.
And that will often consist of some fish, some meat, or just the remains of whatever we had the previous evening. Lots of vegetables and things like that. So I'm, you know, a big believer in... I used to hate vegetables. and then my wife, Claire, is... I think of her as a greyhound and me as a Labrador.
Yeah,
so
okay.
She just has, like you, she is kind of slim. She never has had a problem with keeping the weight off. She is the same size she was when I met her at medical school more than 40 years ago. Mm. And she just has good habits.
Mm.
So she doesn't like to snack. She does not have a sweet tooth. She eats very healthily. She doesn't have to worry about it.
Mm.
I would put on a lot of weight if I had the chance. I am Labrador.
So then it's very good for you to live with Claire. I mean, she must have saved so many years of your life too.
Oh, 100%.
Yeah.
And it makes it so much easier. I think there is a strong genetic component to things like weight gain. And that's why I seriously say, look at dogs. If you look at dogs, it's very clear that some dogs put on a lot of weight and some don't. But equally, you know, the reason Labradors are fat is because their owners feed them. And if they didn't feed them, they wouldn't get fat. Yeah. But it is really much harder for some people than others. I was talking to a geneticist and he said probably about 70% of weight gain is explicable by genetics. It is almost as inheritable as height. We don't blame people for being tall or short, but we do blame them for being fat or overweight. And you should be kinder because for many people, it is much harder. Yeah. It's not impossible. It just means it's hard. Yeah. And I speak as someone
who knows
and for whom it is a struggle. My father was hugely overweight.
Yeah.
And he died.
I know that. He died very early.
He died at the age of 74 from complications of diabetes. And he struggled with weight all his life.
Mm.
And at his funeral, his friends said how much like him I was, which was kind, but also not encouraging.
Mm. So, maybe it made you think.
Oh, I mean, the fact that I developed type 2 diabetes at the same age
that
he was when I was 55.
Mm.
That's what made me
change your life.
And before that, I'd put on weight slowly and steadily and hadn't noticed, and Claire hadn't noticed. She did complain I was snoring a lot. But what was funny is neither of us noticed. But when you look at the photos, I mean, I lost 10 kilos.
Yeah.
And that's how much you want to lose if you have problems with your blood sugars. You need to lose at least 10% of your body weight.
Yeah.
If you want to reverse your diabetes or get rid of your pre-diabetes.
Mm.
For other conditions, it's about 5% of body weight. 5% of body weight is enough to reduce your risk of breast cancer, prostate cancer, hypertension, things like that. So that's what I say. Weight loss is not about looking good on the beach. No. It's about all the other benefits which come with it, including mood.
Yeah.
And so I think time-restricted eating helps. I think eating more plants helps. Eating fermented foods helps. And being active. I think being active is more about keeping the weight off. I think, sadly, there is very little evidence that exercise alone will lead to weight loss.
Yeah.
Almost all the studies show it doesn't.
No, it's hard to, I mean, if you have a big, I don't know, a big ice cream or a big pastry or something, it's very hard to run it off.
People hugely overestimate how many calories they burn and underestimate. So, for example, if you run for 2 kilometers, you'll probably burn about 100 calories, maybe. Yeah. And then if you have a muffin, that's 400 calories.
Mm.
So you go for a short run, you go to the gym, you run for maybe 20 minutes, maybe half an hour, and then you have a cappuccino and a bar of chocolate, and you've wiped out all the calories you've burnt. So what I say to people is, yes, exercise is a brilliant way of improving your mood. It's hugely important you do resistance exercises for your muscles. It's important that you do balance exercises.
Yeah, because you do that every day.
I do that every day. And I could tell you to go and do yoga and tai chi, because those are very good for balance, but you probably won't, which is why my tip is do it when you're brushing your teeth. So most of us brush our teeth twice a day. You should do it for 2 minutes. You should do it with an electric toothbrush. So while you're doing that, why not try standing on one leg for 30 seconds, then the other leg for 30 seconds. And that is a really good way to improve your balance. And balance is hugely important, particularly as you get older, because of the risk of falling over. And plus there are lots of other benefits. And it's also, it becomes a trigger.
Yeah.
So you go, okay, I'm brushing my teeth. What do I do when I'm brushing my teeth? I practice standing on one leg.
That's great. I love how you combine these things because, I mean, then it's, when you listen to it at first, you might think, oh, 30 things. Will I add this to my day? I mean, I have a full-time job and I have children, you know, et cetera, et cetera. Which is very often people come to us and they say, I would love to do this, but I have no time. And I really like how you nudge people to add it into something you're doing. Because then it will not require so much. It doesn't have to require so much extra time.
And it doesn't. Almost all these things require very little time. Yeah. So, for example, you know, doing resistance exercises, you can do them in a few minutes.
Yeah.
Getting into a cold shower takes 30 seconds.
Yeah.
Having sauerkraut for breakfast, no time at all. You're just eating something different.
Yeah.
And doing your balance exercises while you're brushing your teeth, that doesn't take any time at all because you've got to brush your teeth anyway.
Yeah.
So most of these things take no time or very little time. Yeah. Even an early morning walk, yes, that takes time. But alternatively, if you just put a bright light beside your breakfast while you're eating breakfast or you put it by your computer, that takes no time. Yeah. It's just doing something. Yeah. So I'm a great believer like you in doing things which actually, they don't, or they're substitutions. Mm-hmm. So one of my things is dark chocolate. You know, there is some evidence that eating dark chocolate is good for blood pressure because of the impact on the microbiome. But it's not exactly a health food, but it is better than eating milk chocolate.
Yeah.
And, it, you know, the great thing for me is when I start eating milk chocolate, I will eat the whole bar because I do not stop.
I'm exactly. Labrador. But if you get a dark chocolate, you actually stop. Feel that I'm fine now.
I'm fine.
I'm
it's
satisfied.
Not as Moorish.
No.
And it contains a lot of fiber and it contains a lot of polyphenols and other beneficial things. As I said, there have been randomized controlled trials showing that eating a square or two of dark chocolate does indeed lead to modest drops in blood pressure. But I think one of the main benefits is the substitution.
Yeah.
That you are substituting something which is unhealthy for something which is actually a little bit healthier.
Yeah. Substitution are great when you want to create a better lifestyle, I think. You just find a better substitute. So, Michael, I know we don't have all the time in the world, even if I would love to sit and talk to you for a longer time, but you will actually go on to stage in not long. But I would like to know, after your lunch, like what time are you having dinner and what is important to do after dinner before you go to bed?
Sure. So typically we eat about 7 o'clock and try to finish eating by 8 o'clock. And for dinner, we often have fish.
Yeah.
I used to hate fish. But Claire is, you know, she does a lot of recipes. She provides all the recipes for our books. And I've grown to love fish. It's really easy in all its different forms. So I normally have fish with a load of vegetables. I'm relatively low carb because I find that an easier way to maintain my weight because there are also benefits to ketosis. And so again, I still do 5-2 sometimes, time-restricted eating. All of them encourage your body to go into fat burning, which leads to the production of ketones. And there's a lot of interesting research around that. So dinner is typically like that. Sometimes about 2 days a week, we will drink wine, typically red wine, because again, there are kind of some potential health benefits around red wine. But we've cut back on alcohol because to be honest, it doesn't really agree with me and it interferes with sleep. And then after dinner, we will sometimes do a little bit of dancing.
Oh,
so,
that's so nice.
We sometimes go out to an evening class. So we are doing Latin American dancing, a bit of salsa, and maybe one or two nights a week. And it brings us close together. We both like doing it. And there's a lot of research around the benefits of dancing. And because I'm not a good dancer, it really challenging for my brain.
Yeah.
And again,
and that's good also.
That is really good.
Because often we stick to things we're good at.
Absolutely.
But it's so good to stick with things we are not good at, because then it challenges us both mentally but also physically.
Completely. And the great thing about dancing is it is sociable, because you're doing it with your partner and with other people. It is active, because you're getting up and you're moving a lot. And if you're not a good dancer, it is very challenging, because you have to remember all the steps and what you're doing next. And particularly as you get older, there is abundant evidence that challenging yourself frequently is a good thing. So particularly, as you say, you get into your 40s, 50s, whatever, you want to be trying something you have not tried before. It could be painting.
Yeah.
It could be learning a new language. Maybe I should learn Swedish.
Yeah.
That sounds like really difficult.
Yeah. I think it would be very difficult for you, but a good challenge.
Absolutely. And I did a series which is going out on SVT, which is Live Longer with Michael Mosley. We went to California and we looked at a study they were doing there where they took people in their 50s and 60s and they asked them to do three challenging things for 6 months. And those included things like dancing, painting, learning a new language. And they did cognitive tests, memory tests and things like that before and afterwards. And after 3 months of doing this, their brain age, if you like, had dropped by around 20 to 30 years.
Mm.
So they were as mentally flexible as a typical, say, 30-year-old, although they were now in their 50s and 60s.
Mm.
And so I thought that was remarkable.
Mm.
And it shows the power of just going on challenging yourself.
Yeah, that's so important. So you have dinner like 8 o'clock.
Well, and
I know you finish, and I know you say that you should try to get like 3 hours after you finish your last meal until you go to bed. So you go to bed before midnight then.
Oh, I go to bed about 11 o'clock.
Yeah.
Absolutely. I think there is a reasonable amount of evidence of the benefits of going to bed earlier and getting up earlier.
Yeah.
We know I'm a lark anyway. I like going to bed early and get up early. My wife is an owl. She is somebody who likes to stay to the party until the end. But she has reluctantly become a lark to fit in with me.
Mm.
But there is a lot of evidence that people who go to bed earlier and get up earlier, they have a lower risk of depression, anxiety, type 2 diabetes, heart disease, all sorts of things.
Yeah.
And there have been clinical trials as well, where they take people who are owls and they can convert them into larks by basically exposing them to bright light in the morning, making sure that they wake up early in the morning and getting them to do that for a few weeks. Indeed, one of the best ways to convert yourself into a better sleeper is to go camping. So you go camping in the summer, you get lots of bright light, you go to bed earlier naturally, and there have been studies which show that doing that for a week is a great way, and is great for adolescents, for teenagers. So if you have teenagers in your life, if you can persuade them to go camping with you, that will help to sort out their sleeping problems.
Yeah, and it's good in times of inflation. It's cheaper.
It's cheaper, exactly. Yeah.
So it solves many problems. Okay, so thank you, Michael. I would have loved to hear in more in detail about all these 30 tips, but I guess the listeners, they have to go and search for your book.
They have to search for my book.
Yeah.
And I hope they enjoy it. And as I said, don't expect to do all 30 things. Start with one or two things. Yeah. See which ones interest you. What I hope you do is you start with them, you stick with them, you do find that they make a big difference to your life. You decide, oh, that Michael Mosley, maybe he knows a few things. And then you try something else. And then you build up from there.
Mm. Thank you so much for your wonderful work. And thank you for inspiring so many people to a better health. Thank you for joining us.
Du har lyssnat på Food Pharmacy-podden med Lina Närtby och Mia Klase. Det här avsnittet är redigerat av Filippa Markaj och jag, Sebastian Ring, står för musik. Vill du ha mer av oss på Food Pharmacy så finns vi på foodpharmacy.se och på Instagram under namnet food_pharmacy. Tack för den här gången, hej!
Thank you. Hi, I'm Daniel, founder of Pretty Litter. Cats and cat owners deserve better than any old-fashioned litter. That's why I teamed up with scientists and veterinarians to create Pretty Litter. Its innovative crystal formula has superior odor control and weighs up to 80% less than clay litter. Pretty Litter even monitors health by changing colors to help detect early signs of potential illness. It's the world's smartest kitty litter.
Go to prettylitter.com and use code ACAST for 20% off your first order and a free cat toy. Terms and conditions apply. See site for details.
Even when we're on a budget, we still deserve nice things. Quince is a place to scoop up stunning high-end goods for 50 to 80% less than similar brands. They have buttery soft cashmere sweaters starting at $50, luxurious Italian leather bags, and so much more. Plus, Quince only works with factories that use safe, ethical, and responsible manufacturing. Get the high-end goods you'll love without the high price tag with Quince. Go to quince.com/style for free shipping and 365-day returns.
Hey, everyone. Craig Robinson here. I want you to check out the Ways to Win podcast, brought to you by Ford and the new 2024 Ford F-150 truck. On Ways to Win, Coach Cal and I will discuss leadership lessons we've learned. We know all about the days spent perfecting your craft outside of the limelight and have knowledge to share about how strength, inspiration, encouragement, and adaptability are the key ingredients to drive toward your dreams. And those same ingredients can be found in the new 2024 Ford F-150 truck. So check out my podcast, Ways to Win, and also check out the new 2024 Ford F-150 truck. Learn more at Ford.com. Built Ford tough, built Ford proud.